head teacher of a secondary school in Londonderry says teachers are struggling to cope and they may have no other option but to cut the number of hours pupils are in the classroom. Some schools might have to drop to a four-day week if the funding crisis continues. This is the situation we're in Northern Ireland. Michael Allen runs Lisneil College, is with us this morning. Morning to you, Michael.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. So some of these teachers saying, some of these heads saying, we might have to go down to a four-day week. Are you not, are you contemplating that?
Well, I mean, it's certainly something that we will consider as we go forward if there is no change to the current funding crisis that we find ourselves in at the moment. So it's certainly not something that will be rolled out in the near future.
But that would be, would that not be unbelievable that we've got to the stage where we can't teach our kids 5 days a week?
That's the point that we are at, Stephen. I mean, the crisis that we're all talking about at the moment, this hasn't happened overnight. This has been coming probably over the past 10 years, but it has been ignored almost, or it hasn't been important enough, or it hasn't been sexy enough, if you like, for public discourse that really matters. This is deadly serious. And I think we are now at the point where the changes that are coming are finally going to impact on the pupils and the parents. And perhaps this is where the big shift is coming. If you take schools in Northern Ireland, the overwhelming majority of teachers out there are going well, and I mean well beyond the call of duty. So any shortfall in school is met by the goodwill of the teaching staff and non-teaching staff, and if you like, it will be patched over. But because of the funding, because of the lack of funding, I should say, and because I think that the total dereliction of duty on the part of ministers and government means that we are now having to consider a position that will seriously impact on parents and families because teachers can no longer patch over the gaps.
I think there's a real danger here that we become immune to some of the things that's happening in Northern Ireland, and we watch it unfold in front of our eyes, and then a few years down the line we go, why didn't we kick up more of a fuss about that? Why didn't we do something about it? So you're a principal in Northern Ireland. We've heard from other head teachers many times in the Nolan Show saying things similar to a crisis in education in terms of funding. We're a first world country, and you are saying that you might have to go down to a four-day week. A first world country can't teach its kids Monday to Friday.
In a first world country, we cannot rule that out. Stephen, you've hit the nail on the head, and it's this word immune. We have become immune to all the austerity, all these cuts, that it's almost background noise whenever we switch on the radio or we switch on the television. It's just noise in the background, and we hear words about cuts, and we hear words of inflation. And for the most part, that rolls past the ears of the majority of people. I just want to perhaps put a slight slant on this, or come at it from another angle. The NAHP, which is the union which represents principals in Northern Ireland. Now, I might add, I am not a unionised person at all. It does not interest me. So that's the first point. But in a response to the Northern Ireland Accounts Committee, they highlighted that there has been a £200 million reduction over the past 10 years. And in real terms, that is 10%. So what that means is, as well as cuts, schools are encountering costs that they're not being provided the funding for. So it was a 10% real terms. That is the type of language that you hear on the radio and TV. And Stephen, it means nothing to me because, you know, I'm not going to sit and consider what does 10% actually mean. This is what it means. In a class of 30 children, funding for three of those children have been removed over the past 10 years. So in a class of 30 children, only 27 are being funded. And the other 27 are not being funded appropriately. Now, for all the listeners out there who have children sitting in a nursery school, a primary school, or a post-primary school, is your child one of those three? That is the harsh reality of where education is at the moment.
And look, I know the way these things my goodness, I'm going to sound arrogant. I need to rein this in. I'll say it out loud, but I'm not trying to be arrogant, right? I know the way the public react to things because it's what I do every day. I know what they're going to react to. I know pretty much what's going to push people's buttons or not, genuinely, et cetera, et cetera. I reckon that on this story and the meaning behind this story, that unless they think it's actually in real life happening to their child, they're not actually really going to care. They're going to think it's one of these syndromes of it's not going to affect me. And I think that's what's going to happen as a result of you being on the radio this morning, that people are going to think, well, it's not, that couldn't possibly happen to me. That couldn't possibly happen to my school. You know, there's no way my school's going to ring up and say, sorry, we're cancelling a Monday's education for your kids now. It's just Tuesday to Friday. But you're telling me that this is a real possibility in some schools in Northern Ireland. I've heard from other head teachers, they can't even afford toilet roll, for goodness sake, for their school from the budget.
Even this is a reality. And there's just something else I want to bring to the debate here, or opposed to what I'm saying, is that selection in Northern Ireland, now, you know, I'm not about to go off on a pro-selection, anti-selection. After years in the game, I have learned that any time there's a crisis in education, that is the default position. That is the go-to, that is a distraction for anyone to talk about what the real issues are in education. Let's throw selection in there, and suddenly the debate moves in that direction. Now, we're a non-selective school. And I want your listeners to understand how the funding structures in Northern Ireland disadvantage the children post-selection. So this isn't about the selection process. I believe, and it's not very popular amongst many of my non-selective counterparts or colleagues, selection is about pupil choice and parental choice. And I'm standing in no way of a parent and a child having a choice of school that they want to go to. So that's a caveat, if you like, for what I'm about to say. Now, I want to give your listeners a very, very simple explanation or paint a picture of what happens to funding for non-selective schools, where the majority of children are, by the way, at post 11. So here's a picture. There's Town A. And in Town A, there are a number of primary schools and there are two post-primary schools. There is a grammar school and a non-selective school. Both schools have 150 places. One year, there are 300 children in primary school transferring after the selection process. 150 places are available in the grammar. So they set the score and they welcome 150 children into their classrooms. The other 150 make their way into the non-selective. So we have two schools at 150 pupils each catering for those children. That means an equal amount of funding follows those schools. Now, let's say the following year, there are 200 children in primary 7. 150 of those children will probably still find their way to the grammar school because scores will be reduced in order to allow the grammar schools to fill their numbers. And if I was a grammar principal, I'd be doing exactly the same. That leaves 50 children. And those 50 children make their way to the non-selective school. Now, in Northern Ireland, we are funded by pupil numbers. So that means that the non-selective school that year have gone from being 150 pupils to 50 pupils. There's a two-thirds reduction in the funding for that particular cohort of children. There is a strong likelihood, given all the evidence that's out there, that those 50 children who move to the non-selective have overwhelmingly the greatest number of barriers and challenges to face, both at home, in life and society in general, and in academia, in their schooling. And yet the funding will be reduced significantly for that group. Now the school finds itself in a position where it is not being funded appropriately to meet the needs of those children. Plus, they still have to carry the costs of the staff that were already there. Then you can see the big gap. Now, as a non-selective principal, how do I plan for that each year when I don't know the numbers that are coming? That is the structure that we work with in Northern Ireland. On a year-by-year basis, I am unable to plan because I don't know what's coming around the corner. In our programme for government, there are 14 outcomes. And outcome 14 relates, I think, to education and the role of the Northern Ireland Executive and the Department of Education. Within that outcome, there are four indicators. Indicator 11, improve educational outcomes. The school that I work in has seen its results improve exponentially over the past number of years. The staff and pupils are working together. It is a joy to see. And we have increased attainment magnificently. Okay. Now, we are doing our job, Stephen. But it has got to the point now where there is no grand vision. There is no grand plan.
Well, welcome to Northern Ireland.
Stephen, it's embarrassing.
I'm sorry, welcome to Northern Ireland. It's happening in front of our eyes. Welcome to Northern Ireland. There is no, beyond Karen Bradley, and we've dealt with that over the last few days, there's no minister in place in Northern Ireland. All of these local politicians who we all know by name, none of them have the power to do anything because there is no government.
Because, Stephen...
Welcome to Northern Ireland.
Ministers have no interest. Because when it comes to education, look at the portfolio for education over the past 20 years. It moves from one political ideology to another.
I want to bring in.
It finds itself in selection.
Okay, I want to do two things. I want to bring in our listeners this morning, 030-30-80-55-55. I want to speak to the commentator and Conservative Party member, Frank Shivers. Morning to you, Frank.
Morning, Stephen.
So this is, you know, the Conservative Party member, Frank Shivers. Is this what your government, is this what your party is bringing to places like Northern Ireland with these cuts and austerity, that we've got school principals now? They wrote a letter to David Stirling last week saying our school leaders are crying out for help, exasperated by the lack of governance and with significantly increased levels of stress and anxiety.
Well, Stephen, I think as the principal has said, this has been coming for 10 years. And I mean, I've sat in the Board of Governors. I've listened to the budget restraints. They're real. They're actually physically going to impact on our schools. And the time for talking is over. And when we have our politicians locally who have budgets sitting there, but they can't get their act together to go in and sit and distribute those budgets. There's a bigger agenda as well, Stephen, in that we in Northern Ireland, we don't take the hard decisions as a business would. I mean, we've 26 schools earmarked for closure. Okay, there's... the amount of money that's actually spent on our education on the front line is dramatically decreased in comparison to the rest of the UK. In the UK, 2 to 10% is retained centrally. In Northern Ireland, it's 41%. 41% is retained centrally for admin, for various other things. So the teaching section is not getting at the front line. And even the National Association of Head Teachers said pressures could be eased if funding was more effectively targeted to frontline services rather than central administration. It's the normal Northern Ireland problem that we have. We're bogged down with administration. We're not actually putting the money where it needs to be delivered.
Stephen, could I challenge that point just?
Yeah, go on, Michael.
Good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Again, I've listened to this debate a few times and the point you make about funds being held centrally and about administration. Now, the Education Authority, if you like, are the administrators of the department policy. As a principal, I am doing more and more human resources. I am doing more and more legal type stuff is the only way to describe it. I am doing more and more and more of what the Education Authority used to do to support schools because they don't have the people to do that. So this suggestion that all this money is tied up in administration It isn't accurate. I'm sorry.
Well, sorry, Michael. That's not my view.
Yeah, but I understand that. But it is not a true reflection on what the situation. It almost suggests, and again, I'm not saying you've said this, and I will challenge anybody on it. If there's, they bring out this debate that there is money somehow tied up in administration. No, there's not.
Okay,
there's not enough.
Here's Fred in Lisburn. Morning, Fred. Morning, Fred.
Morning, Stephen. Good morning, everybody. How are you?
Go ahead.
Good morning.
I tell you what it is. This school crisis has been going on for years and years, and it's affecting all children. I know people who have children going, primary school children, 4 and 5 years old, going 5 and 6 miles a day each way to get to and from a primary school. I also know children who cannot get places in special needs disability schooling for themselves, who have sight loss, hearing loss, different things like that. When are our politicians going to stop blaming everybody else bar themselves?
Why don't we start blaming ourselves? Because
we
create the political situation here. We vote for the politicians here. We send them a message every time we vote for them.
Well, this was what I was going to come to, Stephen, and everybody. If the top two parties cannot agree, let's take them out of the equation. Nobody can say one side against the other. Then let's see how the other three parties work together.
Well, the big parties are big because they're delivering for people, and that's why they're voting for them.
People are afraid. They're not delivering, Stephen. This is the problem.
Let me bring in Mark Norby as well. Morning, Mark.
Hello, Stephen. How are you doing?
Go ahead.
Stephen, I'm actually running at the moment here, but on this one, and Stephen, I'm so angry. See the politicians we have in our country? They've got worse over the years than they have. I mean, our schools are suffering. Our hospitals are suffering. And now I hear a head teacher on this morning saying it's meant to cut down to a four-day week. Stephen, what is our people doing in our country? Why can't our people get together and see what that gentleman just said? There, drop the two main parties and let the politicians that want to work to get our country up and going.
That's surely crazy what you're saying. If you think about it logically, drop the two main parties. The two main parties are not there because they put themselves there.
They are the most popular parties
in the country because people say, I like your manifesto. I like what you're doing. I like what you're telling me you will deliver.
Let me get in there. I used to vote for the party, but you see now, and I know a lot of people like myself that don't vote no more because we're sick of them. They're doing nothing. Stephen, if I'm going to work today, if I rang my boss and said today, I'm not being today, I'll tell you something, Stephen, I'm not getting paid because my man doesn't get paid, I don't get paid. And I don't know what they're doing. They're sitting in their bums for 2 odd years fighting with each other. I tell you what, Stephen, there's kids in school would do a better job than what they're doing. The people need to stand out and put a stop to this and march those streets. Not march the streets fighting what they used to do in our country. March the streets fighting against those politicians that need to get their finger out. It's a disgrace, Stephen. A disgrace. I'm sick of them, so I am. I really am. I'm filled with back pain listening to them fighting every day in the week. And what are we getting? We're getting nowhere. See, if we were in France, the people would stand out. But they're doing nothing, so they're not. It's a disgrace, Stephen. I'm so angry. Listen to this country. Every day in the week in this video, all we hear is problems, problems, problems. And where's it getting us? We're getting no further along the way.
Well, you know what the impasse is. The impasse are things like an Irish Language Act. The impasse are things like gay marriage. That's why we don't have a local government here. That's what they're fighting about.
Same. I tell you what, it's gibberish to me. I'm out working now, so I am. And if I wasn't working, I would not be getting paid. It's simple as. I'd say not to go here, but I'm busy here working.
And Bob in Bangor. Morning, Bob.
Good morning. I'm listening intently to morning after morning, Stephen. People are phoning up and complaining about the schools, are complaining about the terrible, terrible happenings with the abused people. And you know what? I don't know why they're even phoning you to complain, because there's an election on Thursday, and you know what they'll do? They'll put all the same people back in control. And when the next election comes up, they'll do it again and again. I'm afraid I've reached the conclusion this country has got exactly what it deserves. We actually get what we deserve. And we've no right to phone you and complain anymore, Stephen. These same people have been in for years. We know how incompetent they are, yet we go to the polls and put them right back in their jobs. So really, to phone up and complain, and all the people are going to complain to you all morning, just remember when they're shouting at you, they put them there. We put these people there. It's as much our fault as theirs.
And Jared in Belfast. Morning, Jared.
Good morning, everybody. I just wanted to say, Stephen, I think this is bigger than what we think it is. I don't think it's just down to our politicians, even though we know that there's an inept quality there. I think it's there was a debate on your show a while ago about education and the way that we're teaching people. I think it's out of step. It's about 50 years out of date. I think it's collapsing in upon itself. I don't think this is a much wider thing. We're seeing it within nursing. We're also seeing it within special educational needs. This isn't just a small thing that our ministers can solve. I don't think they can. I think it needs to be an overhaul. And I think one of the principal that was on there, sorry, I can't remember his name, had mentioned about the way that we have a class system, in the sense he didn't use those words, but in regards to the way that we put young children through tests in order to put them in the grammar schools, all that needs to be looked at. As I said, if you look at Finland, the way that they educate themselves and the way that we are, we're at a step, and I think it's way, way too long. I'd also say that basically that I think that, as I said, it's all right to blame the ministers, and they do have a fault. But it doesn't matter whether they're here or not. I think there's a bigger, bigger issue going on. I think our society in general is at a precipice and it needs to look at itself. I would also say that the principals and the teachers, if they think it's as bad as that they're saying it is, which I would agree with, they need to take proactive action and go out and strike. And if that means kids have days off, then maybe parents will wake up, maybe we'll march on the streets for the right things. Sometimes it needs to be hard. Hard truths need to happen, and sadly people have to suffer. But they're suffering anyway, so why not? Why not make it worth something?
Like primary school principals, I've said this once, I'm repeating it deliberately. Don't let this go over any of our heads. Primary school principals writing to the head of the civil service last week, David Stirling, quote, "Our school leaders are crying out for help."
Yeah, but Stephen, what are they doing about it? They're sitting in their jobs, though. They're doing it above and beyond. They shouldn't be doing that. I'm getting fed up with it. I hear it all the time. Above and beyond. It's amazing what they're doing, but it's not enough. They need to come out with one voice. These people will do nothing while people continue on carrying out their job. Get out of your school. Turn around and say, we can't do it. We marched on climate change. We need to do it more than ever.
So 500 Northern Ireland primary school principals told the head of the Northern Ireland Civil Service that children are suffering.
Yes, and that they are. And they sit in their desks.
But that barely... BBC, our colleagues in the BBC newsroom here in Northern Ireland saw that letter. They broke that story. But look, if I'm being frank about it, that barely landed in any of our psyche in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, of course it
right?
didn't.
It barely, that's no criticism of the journalist that did it. I'm actually criticising us as a community. So we've got 500 primary school principals. Children are suffering. There would be more talk around Game of Thrones or an episode of Strictly than all of these head teachers saying, quote, teachers are on their knees. And what's happening in Northern Ireland? I wonder if what's actually happening is that we're immune to this place drifting, that's what we're actually used to now. So gone are the days where we're kind of thinking, could Northern Ireland be at the very top of leading the way in the world, of fighting for, you know, for us to be the best at what we can do? No, we're drifting. We're drifting in this immune sleep.
But it's not a surprise. None of it's a surprise. We've been predicted about it. There's people been talking about it. There's not only myself, but loads of other people agree. But the problem with it is that if you have principals and teachers sitting in schools continuing on the job claiming that it's as bad as it is, then that adds to the problem. And also as a society, have failed miserably. This has been coming. Our education system has failed, and it has been failing for more than 10 years, I'd say. As I said, it's 50 years out of date. We need to wake up to what's going on. And if people don't want to, then their head be it.
Jared, thank you. Kate and Yuri. Morning, Kate.
Good morning, Stephen. How do you do?
I'm very interested in
your discussion this morning, and I'm delighted you are trying to deal with this issue. I completely support that school principal. He expressed himself on the situation very well. And if we actually look at, you know, it's not just that the school budgets have been slashed, but they have taken away funding for the primary languages programme. We haven't enough classroom assistance and literacy support assistance in our schools to help the children that are now crowding into them. We have the very best of children in Northern Ireland. We have the very best of parents, but we also have an awful lot of young children, especially young ones, coming into school who are simply in need of a mass amount of professional, well-resourced, well-researched support.
Kate, I was up in West Belfast a couple of months ago, and I was sitting with very young children in a primary school class, and they were taking away the teaching assistant because they didn't have the budget. And I sat beside some of these kids who needed that teaching assistant essentially to be able to go to school because they had special needs. And that teaching assistant was being removed.
Yeah.
And do you know what? And do you know what? There is more reaction in this country if a flag goes up on a lamppost.
Yeah. We will rue the day. One just final thing on that. We, for the last, I suppose, 10 years, nearly that amount of time, we have done no research and development in Northern Ireland. And the point I think the last speaker made, which was that, you know, we are behind. We definitely, clearly are behind. So, you know, even if we do get more literacy support and classroom assistance, we need to train them. You don't just put a body in a classroom with a bunch of children and say, just be in there.
Yeah.
You make sure that person is well professional. We've been doing none of that.
We need to be careful. I need to be careful about what I'm saying because there's election period coming up, etc., etc. But, you know, I would say to everyone listening this morning, do you think there is a charismatic or inspirational leader or politician emanating from any political party in Northern Ireland that says to you, we can actually improve this country, that can't tell you what their sole position is on a policy and how it contrasts to others, but is there anybody in politics that actually you kind of feel a vibe in yourself? You kind of think, my God, they can actually change Northern Ireland for the better. And that's an open question to you all this morning. Here's John in South Belfast. Then we've got to go to the news. Morning, John.
Stephen, no disrespect to you. No, I'm sick of listening to you trying to tell the rest of us that, you know, we have the smartest people, you know, in this country. We're trying to run the country.
Here's what I've said, so don't misquote me.
It doesn't say too much about the rest of us. That may tell you. It doesn't say too much about the rest of us.
Here's what I have said, John, and it's simply true. It is just gratuitous, it's vacuous, it's stupid to label all of these politicians lazy or inept because they're not. I'm telling you, some of the politicians in this country are bright and care as much as you do. Yes, they are. I've met lots of them. I know lots of them.
We wouldn't be in the position we're in. Don't be talking nonsense. You're talking nonsense. Why are we in this position? Why are we in this position? Because see the tent, all right. Sinn Féin won't go and sit in Westminster Parliament. That's okay.
And that's what they stand in front of their electorate on.
These are 10 people that are the DUP. But should they spend more time in Westminster than what they do here? There's no curvers here. No,
they don't. They're MPs for a start, and their job is to represent people in Westminster.
That's all right. It doesn't matter, but they're actually running about. So everything's about them.
No. Let's be careful now.
What are you talking about? Everything's about the national. Now, listen, there was a guy early on there that suggested, see these people, say they don't want to do their job, ignore them, and get people in that want to do their job. The people in the want to do the job, and you keep saying, that was sure we voted these people in. Well then, we're saying, tell them that, see, we don't want to do the job, get out of that place, go and live in England, or go and live wherever you want to go, because you spend more time over there anyway. Not only that, as he said, see the primary school teachers, every single one should walk out.
That would do a lot of good, wouldn't it? That would do a lot of good. They walk out, then kids can't go to school any day of the week.
Well, listen to me. Well, because see at the minute, as they keep going the way they're going, kids are not going to school anyway. So don't be talking nonsense. And gee,
don't know what you're taking it out on me for.
Well, because you keep telling me, you keep You keep trying to tell us that these are the smartest people in the world that we have. Don't be talking absolute nonsense, because we wouldn't be in the position we're in.
I have not said they're the smartest people in the world. I've told you they're bright.
You keep telling us.
Some of them are bright, some of them are articulate, and some of them are as passionate about you. Well, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to come on and say they're all wasters?
No, I didn't say it. You used that word, I didn't. Listen to me. What about the rest of us? How do we feel if you're trying to tell us what they are and what they aren't? And we're in the position we're in. Just stop talking like that. Mm-hmm. And let people come on and stop interrupting people. Stop interrupting people when they're making a point. Because don't say that as I say to you, why don't all these teachers stand up and be counted and say, right, see us, we're finished, we're out. Now what's going to happen?
Okay.
They'll not belong getting things sorted out then.
John, nice to talk to you, my friend. Thank you very much.